Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
Brexit means Brexit.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the Atlantic from the perspective of the other. I'm Royfield Brown, who is hopefully in my last few days in Birmingham in England, because I should be on a plane to California this weekend. Today, we are going to really focus more on the UK than the US, because Boris Johnson's position as UK Prime Minister could well be up in a week that has seen MI5 accuse a lawyer of trying to influence politicians on the behalf of China. We ask just exactly what it will take for Boris Johnson to do the right thing and fall on his sword.
Well, there we have it. After months of deceit and deception, the pathetic spectacle of a man who's run out of road. His defence, that he didn't realise he was at a party. It is so ridiculous that it's actually offensive to the British public. He's finally been forced to admit what everyone knew, that when the whole country was locked down, he was hosting boozy parties in Downing Street. Yes. Is he now going to do the decent thing and resign? Yes.
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the point that he's making about the event that I attended. I want to repeat that I thought it was a work event, and Mr. Speaker, I regret very much that we did not do things differently that evening. And Mr. Speaker, as I've said, and I take responsibility and I apologise, Mr. Speaker. But as for his political point, I don't think that he should preempt the outcome of the inquiry. He will have a further opportunity, Mr. Speaker, I hope.
Keir Starmer.
Well, that apology was pretty worthless, wasn't it? Yeah.
Steve, could you give us the backstory of how we've got here? Can you give us just the rough timeline, not only of the party, which happened in May 2020, but then the subsequent denials that 10 Downing Street have made, which has led us to where we are today?
Yeah, it's been a long-running thing, and the Partygate issue and scandal is one of many that's been building up, but it's been the big one, it's been the main one. So yes, you mentioned the party that we're talking about at the moment is in May 2020, and that in the UK and most other places was probably our hardest sort of point of lockdown. So when there was no sort of socialising allowed at all, there's a series of parties that have kind of been drip leaked. And I don't know if people have been watching the news just in the last hour, there's a new one not involving Boris Johnson or other of the ministers, as far as I know, but a new one actually days before the funeral of Prince Philip had just sort of hit the news. Anyway, the one we're talking about is May 2020, and there were a series of them throughout 2020 that kind of been drip-dripped. And we've now found out on Wednesday, Boris Johnson has admitted that he attended one and apologised for it, having denied it constantly. He sort of tried to get out of it, say, well, I thought it was a work meeting. That has led to meme after meme and joke after joke. It does look a bit ridiculous. And I think, as you just heard from those clips of Keir Starmer somewhat skewering him, well, yeah, he's been somewhat skewered for how ridiculous it looks.
Very obviously, Boris Johnson, he has no defence in terms of, it's very obvious that he has lied, saying that first he wasn't at this party, didn't know there was a party, then he was saying, I didn't know it was a works party. But we've got to remember that this was May 2020 when the country was on severe lockdown. Is that, with that in mind, do you think that maybe Sir Keir Starmer yesterday could have been even more forceful in the House of Commons? I'm looking at the press says, you know, Boris has fundamentally got nowhere to go. But I didn't think that Sir Keir was as devastating as he could have been.
It's tricky, I think, or it's sort of famously tricky when the goal is so open, people expect you to sort of knock the goal over. And in some ways, I think that, I mean, he's gone as far as he can in calling for Boris to resign. I've got to say, I haven't listened to the entirety of PMQs yet. I've seen a lot of the clips, which is how most people will experience it on the news. But I thought he was pretty forceful. I think that one shouldn't over expect that to deliver this kind of thing. Maybe he could have been more angry. I'll take that point, but I wouldn't overplay it.
So there is going to be an inquiry. Isn't this just a way for the Conservative Party? Well, sorry, for Number 10, because there's a clear breach now between the Conservative Party and actually Number 10, you know, the PM's office. Isn't this just a way of knocking the ball down the road for a bit and hoping that some of the heat will be lessened here?
I think that's what they're hoping, and that's the purpose of it. I mean, The inquiry is being run by someone called Sue Gray, who's a very senior civil servant based in the Cabinet Office and someone who I think is very respected, but technically not independent. She's part of the government. She's a sort of non-political government member. And yes, I think in practice what will happen, a few weeks will go by, the heat will be taken off them. And probably what that report will say is not sort of X should resign or X broke the law, but it will lay out what she believes the facts to be. Now, quite how the reaction to that goes down, I don't think we know, but it won't be written in an explosive way. So, yeah, it might sort of allow them to evade it. They probably had no choice but to do something like this. And Royfield, you might recall that originally the civil servant tasked with this, Simon Case, who's the sort of top civil servant, had to recuse himself because he was himself found to have gone to a Christmas party.
Why isn't the Met Police investigating this? Because at that time, the Met Police were arresting and fining people for not securely being in lockdown. You know, many people were found out having parties. You know, just repeat, if this happened now, people would be much more relaxed about it. But this was May 2020 when people were getting fined and actually were spending a night in a police prison waiting to see exactly what they're going to be sentenced for. So why aren't the police investigating this?
So they put out a statement earlier, and you know, you might want to read between the lines and say it's a bit of a cop-out, but what they focused on was trying to prevent ongoing risks of transmission. I'm just trying to get the statement up on my phone, as I won't read it out, but that's what they were saying, that it's a risk in the past isn't something they've dealt with, and they described an approach where they normally would turn up to, let's say there's a party and then with a lockdown, I mean, this doesn't happen. They would try and explain the rules and persuade before they do anything. So they've sort of said that this is consistent with their approach. Maybe that's a cop-out. I don't envy the position they've been put in, but I do think it would be, I would have been pretty surprised if they were going to investigate this in this context.
Piotr, you're a Brit. You look at British politics on a daily basis. If you're a betting man, how much money would you put on Boris Johnson still being the Prime Minister come this time on Monday?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm only a half Brit, so that's a good question. But I would say, using my half
British knowledge. He'll still be the PM on Monday. But I think what's really interesting about this is the comments. You know, we've got to be honest, this is the weakest that the PM has looked for a while. He's always had a bit of a tumultuous existence in number 10. But you can't get away from the implications of this on the public health front and just the pure hypocrisy. And he, for once, really can't hide behind his sort of, you know, grinning buffoonery and demeanor. So I would say, and also point out that the comments from Chancellor Sunak are quite interesting, because he said, you know, Mr. Johnson had been, quote, right to apologize, but then also said, you know, he added he agreed with his calls for patience. So that little, though, right to apologize, I think is quite indicative of Rishi's thinking about moving from number 11 to number 10. And he's by far the most popular candidate to replace the PM. And frankly speaking, he looks much more statesman. And so I think that even if it's not Monday, you'll certainly be seeing people talking amongst the 1922 committee about, you know, whether or not it's time to, Johnson had his time. He's had his period, his tenure, but it's time to take, you know, hedge bets and move on to someone else. And I think that's small, very subtle, but enough of a comment from Sunak is illustrating that, you know, he's trying to appeal to the membership as well as sort of somewhat support his PM. But I think Johnson is I don't think he'll last the next few months. No, I don't.
But your money's on it that he'll at least last until Monday. What is this inquiry going to actually find? Is it going to basically kind of lay bare the kind of farcical kind of drinking, impromptu socializing culture, which has actually been Boris Johnson's fundamental skill? That's actually how he navigated the Houses of Commons and has got his way to become Prime Minister, by being, you know, the type of person you want to have a drink with. So it makes sense that he had these parties in Downing Street. It was just that we're all shocked that he had them during lockdown. What is this inquiry going to discover for us, Steve, which we didn't know? Because we've seen the videos, we've seen the pictures. He had the party. They were there. They weren't masked. They weren't socially distancing. And it was May 2020. What is there for us to learn?
I suspect you're spot on. I doubt we'll learn very much, much more, maybe a few details about how it came about. But yeah, we'll learn they had parties. We'll learn there was a bit of drinking culture. We'll learn they weren't taking the restrictions that they were involved in putting in place nearly seriously enough. I think you're right. I think we know it already. It'll be set out. I think the politically interesting bit is how much Boris and any other politicians involved knew about it, and whether they were there, really. Because a lot of the stories of parties, it's insinuated they're there, and sometimes it's civil servants and staff. And I think putting a finger on that is the interesting thing. But I think we sort of know he already went to a few of them, at least briefly, and, you know, that's why he apologised this week.
Piotr, you talked about Rishi Sunak, Dishy Rishi, as the red types like to call him. Let's go through the runners and riders who could possibly be the next leader, not only of the Conservative Party, but of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. You talked about Rishi and his kind of tepid support, but Savid Javid said that most people have accepted and that we need to have an inquiry and need to wait for Mrs. Gray's findings. We've had Lynn Truss, who's also somebody who is kind of promoted as potentially being the next leader of the country, saying that she stood behind the Prime Minister 100%. And this comes at a time when we have the leader of the Scottish Tories saying that he's got to go, and many senior backbenchers have urged him to go. The leader of the Tories in the London Council has basically said that his position is also untenable. So we have this unprecedented situation whereby senior Tories are given, basically saying that he has to go, but then some are given these almost like Kremlinologist type messages about supporting the Prime Minister. Do you think if there is a leadership election, that it'll be short and sharp and it's just a coronation for Rishi? Or will this be much more of a situation whereby MPs go to the 1922 committee and then formally take away their support from Boris Johnson?
I think there's two things here which are important to keep in mind. One, that this is a reflection of generally a system which is terribly flawed. This isn't, you know, that basically the Conservatives have a method of changing leadership, changing the PM without actually going to an election. You know, they did this with Boris before. And it's possible, likely that this will happen again. So we will get a new leader, a new representative of the country on the international stage without any direct input. And so is that really democratic? Secondly, I mean, discussing the candidates themselves, there are two main candidates. I mean, you know, media discusses a multitude of different people from, you know, including Michael Gove, Jeremy Hunt, who ran before, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, the current Health Secretary. All these people are candidates, but there's only really two that are sort of within a reach of it, and that is Liz Truss, the newly incumbent Foreign Secretary and Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. So, or Dishi Rishi, which I don't think I'll say again. Now, Liz Truss is an interesting one. She's very, very popular amongst the membership base, but she has stormed up from being almost nobody, really, a very junior member of the cabinet or parliament sort of system, if you like, to now being the third most powerful or second most powerful, depending upon how you look at the structure in the entire government. She's relatively young, only 46 years old, and she's but she's hated by general public image. She's very popular in the Conservative Party, but not so much amongst the general British electorate. Dishi Rishi, on the other hand, is very popular amongst a lot of different people. He's come from a very, very, you know, stabilized background. He's married into a very wealthy family, an Indian family, and he's gone to, you know, Winchester private school. He studied in this, worked in the city, and taken a markedly different approach to Johnson, favoring things like lower taxes and tougher public spending restraint. And you know, his things like the schemes he's done during the COVID pandemic have been very, very popular and quite successful. You know, they've been replicated in other countries. So I think if it were to come down to a competition, I think that Sunak could run away with it quite easily. And I frankly would prefer him to Boris Johnson. But as I say, this, I think, is part of a bigger problem, which is that no one in the electorate really in Britain has the ability to define who they want in power. You know, we need an election if we're going to have a change of leadership in the Conservative Party. But that's unfortunately not how the system works. So that's all I'll add to that.
I'm all up for the parliamentary way of doing things as opposed to the presidential. So I'm going to respectfully disagree with you about the fact that we need to have an election to see who's going to be the prime minister. However, Steve O'Neill, could you give us an idea of which bit of the party Liz Truss sits in? Is she right wing? Is she more moderate? And also Rishi Sunak, because to put Piotr's point, I don't know an awful lot about Liz Truss either. She seems to have come from nowhere and come from nowhere pretty fast.
She's hard to place, Liz Truss. So she was originally, actually, when I was a junior civil servant, part of education, she was there. So I actually came across her a couple of times. And she was a junior minister then, sort of worked her way up. I think she's well known as a political manoeuvrer, really, and was known as someone who went to the Trade Department, signed lots of trade deals, did a very good job of looking sort of ministerial with the flag behind her, doing trade deals with Canada, Australia and the like. And that sort of endeared her to Conservative Party membership and MPs to some extent, and propelled her to Foreign Secretary. I couldn't tell you where she sits in terms of the party and there's a right or left in the Conservative Party. I think she pivoted very neatly from being a sort of soft Remain supporter to being very sort of convert to Brexit. I couldn't tell you her views on the economy, for example. One thing I can tell you is actually, famously, she used to be a Lib Dem, and there's a good clip of her as about sort of 19-year-old saying some quite left-wing things about the monarchy in Lib Dem conference, if you want a bit of trivia fact. Sunak is another interesting one. So I think with him, it's well documented that his views are quite what we might call neoliberal. He's sort of a low-tax conservative. Again, a sort of Brexit supporter. However, you know, that endears him to some of the right of the Conservative Party, so they trust him on that. However, he has spent lots of money during the pandemic. So the reason the public like him, seemingly, is the furlough scheme, support he's given to industry, the way they phrase it is putting their arms around the kind of country. And I think that sort of tone has made him very popular. His actual views on the economy aren't now popular. So how that is going to play out, I think, is quite interesting. But he might receive some support from the kind of right wing of the Conservative Party because they do perceive him as a low tax, neoliberal type of politician.
Let's bring you some breaking news now on the fallout from these latest claims of Downing Street parties. Let's bring in our deputy political editor, Sam Coates, who's in Westminster, and can tell us more. Sam.
YouGov have surveyed over 5,000 people today about what they think about Boris Johnson's position. Let's bring you the results. 56% say that Boris Johnson should resign in a poll seen by Sky News today. 27% say he should remain in his role. So that's the no, Boris Johnson shouldn't resign on your screen now. And 17% think that they don't know at the moment.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Is the fate of Boris Johnson going to be decided in the back benches of Parliament, or is it going to be in the court of public opinion? My gut is that this is all down to the Daily Mail and Daily Mail readers, that if he survives until Sunday, it's going to be those editorials in the Mail on Sunday and possibly in the Times, which is going to do for him. How wildly am I out with this analysis, Steve O'Neill?
I think that he is supported by Conservative MPs to the extent that he can win. Remember, he's got an 80-odd seat majority, and that will take some doing to convince people. You hear a lot of noise, but he still won an 80-seat majority. So until something really convinces them he won't ever win again, and you just cite some polling that's going that way, I think he might be harder to remove than we're thinking right now. But ultimately, if the polls, and probably more importantly, and maybe we've got some local elections, a bit like the US, a sort of midterm situation, if that goes really badly, then I think he's in big trouble. But I think, and I could well be made to look silly for saying this, I think his position's a bit more secure in the next, what we told May, about 5 months, than most people are making out. I think he's pretty safe. And if he does okay in local elections, I would, to my neck out here, say he'll probably fight the next election.
Steve, there's a Scottish Conservative Party conference in March, and the leader of the Scottish Conservatives have said, do not come. All of the Scottish MEPs have said, we do not want you there. Surely, Boris Johnson is gravely wounded.
He's definitely gravely wounded, and I think he's definitely damaged. It's, I suppose, whether he's fatally damaged or not. In terms of the Scottish political situation, and I'm not an expert in this, but he is so unpopular in Scotland, and they're thinking about how they win votes in Scotland. So distancing themselves from Boris was always a good idea. Now, given the way he's gone, it's definitely a good idea. So I'm sure they genuinely believe he should go, but they don't want him there because they'll make them look bad. And the reason Douglas Ross, their leader, came out and said he should resign, I think, is to try and garner support in Scotland as much as anything else. I think these things are quite cynical calculations about how to win votes.
We have on stage Steve Crone, good friend of us Brits, has a little apartment in the centre of London, and we were joined on stage by Drew James. Steve Crone,
I'm asking a question that could just be looked up, and so forgive me, but I hope it's of general use to the audience, and that is this procedure, and you've alluded to it, by which party changes its leader, and that's the party in power, and therefore the new leader becomes the prime minister. Can someone talk about the history of that? I don't recall this before relatively recently. Is this some new thing? Has it always been possible, but just not done as often? Can someone just speak to the history and the technical aspects of this way of changing the leader of the country? It seems quite odd.
Well, first off, and I'm going to go to you, Steve, but this, we've got to remember, the leader of the country is the Queen, right? He's the head of the executive. He's not the head of state. So, and when we vote in a general election, we are voting for our MPs, in effect, our congressmen, whichever political party then forms a majority. We're not actually voting as you do in the presidential way. When I vote, let's say, in Erdington in Birmingham, I am not voting for Boris Johnson. He's
sure.
Not
no,
on
I
the
understand
ticket.
That, of
He's
course.
Not on the but ticket.
I thought in the past, you know, you had to have a vote of no confidence, and there was a new election. You couldn't just replace, but maybe this has always been the way it works.
Well, Steve O'Neill, why don't you tell Steve Crone about the 1922 committee, and maybe let's have a short history lesson about various conservative coups and how they've got rid of leaders before.
I'm not sure I'm the person to do the history lesson, but just generally, in the House of Commons, if you have the confidence of most of the MPs and majority, you're Prime Minister. It's always been like that. Theresa May, I don't remember, they got rid of Cameron. That's exactly how it happened. They had a majority, a small majority, and the reason she became Prime Minister was they had the most MPs. That's only a few years ago. So it has always been like this. I can't tell you whether there were changes hundreds of years ago, but it's been like this for a long time. So the 1922 committee, that's backbench Conservative MP. What we mean backbench is they're not in the government. They're not ministers. And there's a rule whereby if a certain proportion of them, I can't remember the percentage, but I think right now it's 55, put in letters saying, I don't have confidence in the Prime Minister, that triggers a vote or a procedure whereby you know, he can get removed, a vote of no confidence. And that's as leader of the Conservative Party. And then after that, they have to find a new leader where they've got a process where they have to, in Theresa May's case, they all said there was no competition. In other cases, there might be, you get down to a final few, and that would go to the Conservative membership. So there's a different process through the Conservative Party. But for, in terms of the leader of the country, if you've got the most MPs, or you've got a majority of MPs in the House of Commons, you're Prime Minister, and that's all there is to it. And I'm pretty sure that's all there's ever been to it.
Yeah, the other thing to say is that there is this formal mechanism, as Steve said, the 1922 committee. And to be the chairman of that committee is actually quite a powerful position, because what the Conservative backbench MPs are doing is taking the temperature of how they think the government is actually doing. And as Steve O'Neill said, I can't remember exactly what the percentage is, but maybe let's say it's like a quarter of all Conservative MPs, it's something like that, need to register with the 1922 committee that they have no confidence in the leader. And then that triggers an automatic kind of vote. However, what the Conservative Party have been expert at, and Piotr, I will come to you. We do have Drew on stage, and then Corey's also joined us. What the Conservatives have been very expert at doing is coalescing very quickly around the presumed new leader, so they don't always have to go down and have a formal election. And I cannot see, if Boris Johnson doesn't survive, I think what would happen is that the 1922 committee would take soundings from key Conservative ministers and backbenchers. There'd be two or three people who would basically informally throw the hat into the ring, but there'd be a coronation within 48 hours because the country is in the middle of a pandemic. It wouldn't serve the country any good at all for there to be a drawn out formal election like there was when the Conservative Party was in opposition. So this would be sorted out within 48 hours and someone would emerge because they've had, it's like the smoke-filled rooms that used to kind of crown presidential nominees in the US. You know, smoke-filled rooms, deals are done. This person has the confidence of more MPs.
Very quickly. So you're right. Tory MPs will initiate a vote of no confidence when 15% or around 54 MPs write to the chair of the party 1922 committee saying that they have lost confidence in the party leader. MPs then vote in support or against the leader. This can happen quickly. For example, this happened relatively quickly in 2018, the day after Theresa May was informed that the 15% threshold had been reached. May needed about 160 MPs, I think it was, to support her stay, and won the vote by 200. So under current rules as well, an important point to note is if more than 50% of all MPs, currently 181, vote in support of the Prime Minister, they can stay as party leader and Prime Minister, and no be triggered for another year. So that's generally the sort of the system. And then there have been some initial changes to it since like 1965. It was done via sort of merging, but after that, it's been now via sort of formal elections. So that's just a little bit of a context behind the actual leadership change. And as Steve has already pointed out, you know, we've had this in 2017, we've had this in 2019 between Bojo and Jeremy Hunt, and it's possible we could see this happen again. But I you know, it'd be very interesting to see how it happens if it were to. But back to you.
Thank you for that, Piotr. And I didn't realise it was as a smaller percentage as 15%. I said 25. So it's just thank you for that bit of clarification. Drew James, you've joined us on stage. Welcome to Mid-Atlantic, sir.
So I have a bit of a comparative politics question for the panel, because I found the discussion about this Partygate scandal fascinating when we began speculating about Boris Johnson's resignation. As you may be aware, the Canadian Prime Minister has had a few of his own scandals. He had the infamous and humiliating blackface scandal, but also another quite serious scandal where someone goes so far as to say that he obstructed justice by interfering in a criminal prosecution. Some would say that. I'm not saying I say that, but, you know, they're not good facts. And to my eye, those scandals are worse than Partygate, taken together or even separately. There are very, very few scenarios I can envision that would result in a party revolt against Justin Trudeau. Only two MPs left the Liberal Party during the aforementioned scandals. Everyone else backed him. And this may be due to the fact that the Canadian Conservative Party has proven themselves incapable of capitalizing on those scandals, and Trudeau remains politically powerful. But that seems to be the case for Boris Johnson as well. I'm not seeing anything that would indicate that he would be vulnerable to losing an election. So I guess my question is this, what do you guys think accounts for the difference there? And can you comment a little bit on what triggers a party revolt like this in the UK?
Should I come in again on that one?
Go for it, Steve.
Yeah. So this is bad, this Partygate, but it's only perhaps the worst bit of a long series of difficulties they've had. So there have been numerous corruption scandals for the government in general. You might have seen various affairs on the health sector. You had various things about contracts, dodgy contracts during the pandemic. But in particular, the number 10 tried to change the rules in Parliament about accepting for an MP accepting money for lobbying activities to try and sort of save one of their own, essentially. This is an MP called Owen Paterson, who's since resigned. And so this is the last of a long list of things that has weakened, that damaged the Conservative brand and the Prime Minister. At the same time, actually, Labour is starting to do better in the polls. So you mentioned the context of that. They're 10 points ahead in the poll a couple of days ago. Now, it'll probably even out because this is the middle of the crisis. But there's that as well. And also, there's a context within the Conservative Party about an unhappiness with the handling of the pandemic. I think quite a lot of the right-leaning MPs didn't want any more restrictions and felt the government, and I know for some of us that this might seem sort of mind-boggling, but they felt that the government was being too ready to damage civil liberties. They thought there was too much restrictions and lockdown type activities. And so there's some internal politics that is making it very awkward for Boris as well. The other bit of that is he's rising taxes to pay for healthcare, raising national insurance, and we've got a big inflation and cost of living crisis. They're also not happy about that. So there's lots of different reasons, and this being the epicentre of Partygate, that are making the current Prime Minister a lot weaker. I don't know whether all those things are there in Canada for Trudeau.
To also reiterate what Steve has said there, whenever there comes to a point whereby you're being told, whether it's by the leader of your party in Scotland or the leader of your party in London and various MPs, that it's time to go. As Steve said, it's because there's been a build-up of other events. And the other thing about this, the reason why potentially it is a tipping point, is because it kind of reinforces all the things which we kind of implicitly believed about Johnson and the way that he was actually running the country, that he was doing it in a very slapdash way. It was all about being very casual. And then that had just been reinforced by the history of what the government has done during the pandemic. And then we discover that when we have the worst COVID death figures in Europe, that 2 months into the pandemic, there were garden parties in Downing Street when people were being arrested and being fined for breaking those rules. So it's only just goes to reinforce exactly what people implicitly thought. And we go, ha ha, there you go. This man is kind of incompetent. When it comes to Canada and Trudeau scandals, I always kind of remark, and we did do a couple of shows about it. For a start off, the blackface one was when he was a student, and then the picture came out 20 odd years later. So that's different. That's different. It's not as if Trudeau, when he was prime minister, you know, in 2016, was going out to parties in blackface. But it has to be said, considering that a lot of these shows are about comparing and contrasting with the United States, that our scandals seem to be trifling compared to what an American president, and I'm pointing the finger at Donald Trump, can seem to get away with. You know, it appears that we have a much lower tolerance to bad behavior by our public officials. But maybe Donald Trump is an outlier in this regard. Aram, you were going to unmute yourself there.
Yeah, as you know, quaint as the sort of Canadian scandals may sound to British ears, this scandal of Partygate sounds quaint to my American ears. You know, in October of 2020, Donald Trump hosted a celebration regarding the, I can't remember if it was the nomination or the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. The top infectious disease expert in the U.S. called it a super spreader event. It's come out since that, in fact, it was. There were loads of people who contracted the virus. It was done very, very publicly and, you know, was basically a statement by the president that he didn't really care, right? Like, he could do whatever he wanted and, you know, whatever the eggheads were saying, he didn't really, you know, the rules didn't apply to him. And it was just sort of, you know, shrug your shoulders and move on kind of thing. So it's just really interesting to hear, you know, that this could take down or be the straw that broke the camel's back, at least where it comes to Boris Johnson. But in the U.S., that's a scandal that is, you know, buried under a litany of other scandals that, you know, define the Trump administration.
Was that the event where Chris Christie contracted COVID as well?
You know, I don't even know. There were so many people who caught it there.
Steve O'Neill, does the Conservative Party owe Boris Johnson a little bit more? He has delivered Brexit. We have left the European Union in whatever state we've actually done that. And he gave them a thumping majority that nobody saw coming. He's fundamentally, at least for 18 months, the opposition in the United Kingdom has been decimated. And, you know, there is no conversation worthy of the name about Brexit anymore. He has changed the needle and he's managed to do that and fundamentally take the Conservative Party into this new Brexit sunny uplands. So shouldn't they, you know, rally around him because he's delivered a thumping majority?
A lot of them do, who you're not hearing from, probably are thinking that because they do have a big majority. And it's been a long time before that election that they had a majority. I don't think that is a majority they're going to get again easily, or that any party will get again easily in Britain, really. I think they might be things of the past. And he did deliver that through his campaign in 2019. Now, I sort of think that it wasn't necessarily his personal qualities. It might have been more circumstance. I think Theresa May did a lot of work weirdly, she was perceived as an election loser, but a lot of work making inroads in the seats that ultimately he won. So really, I'm talking about seats more in the northern part of the country, northern Midlands, that were called the Red Wall, used to be Red Labour seats, and the Conservatives have taken them over. And Boris, well, that was the big thing that happened in 2019, winning lots of those seats. But yeah, I think you make a good point. He is a big election winner. And it comes back to the at what point do you sort of have that bit of evidence in the past and think, well, all the polling and the perception and the news stories from the present are telling, you know, telling Conservative MPs that that won't happen again. But, you know, it's a big point in his favour to get around. And that's kind of why my hunch, not sure it's worth that much, is that he isn't going anywhere particularly quickly.
AB, you've joined us on stage.
Hello, everyone. I just had a question for the panel. So I guess when the discussion is really about whether or not Boris Johnson will survive this, so I guess I kind of want to investigate both outcomes. Per se, he does survive this scandal. What does that say about the Conservative Party's, I guess, threshold? Or I mean, at the end of the day, this is all about power. So does this, in essence, give them the license to essentially feel empowered that no matter what, they can pretty much survive anything so long as they have, you know, a politician who is popular and can deliver on providing the necessary votes, a la Donald Trump? And on the other side, if he doesn't survive, what will, in essence, be the legacy of Boris Johnson going forward? And do you foresee another candidate like him because he's been able to weather so many scandals at the Conservative Party? Do you think that they're going to allow, you know, someone similar who has the potential to create, you know, damning news, or are they going to kind of clean up and try to reform within their ranks? Thank you.
I'll answer a bit of that, and then I'll throw it back to Steve O'Neill. The Conservative Party is the oldest political party, I believe, in the world, but definitely in the Western world. It was formed round about 1740, the Conservative Party. They were called the Tories back then. One thing which they're famed for is for their survival instincts. And they jettisoned Margaret Thatcher, who at that point, as far as the rest of the world was concerned, was the Iron Lady. She'd won three general elections, the longest term that a British Prime Minister had actually been in 10 Downing Street, at least for like 100 plus years. So the Conservative Party can be ruthless when they want to be. But generally, when they wield the knife, they wield it pretty quickly. The other point that I'd say is that and we did talk about this earlier on, the two obvious candidates to be the leader are not at all Trump-like. Boris Johnson hasn't wielded an influence over the Conservative Party in the way that Trump has with the Republican Party. Boris Johnson hasn't remade the Conservative Party. What he has been is somebody who electorally, because of his affable nature, could go out and win seats which were kind of unwinnable for the Conservative Party before. But his legacy fundamentally will be the Prime Minister who delivered Brexit. Regardless of what happens, he will go down in history books as that. Steve O'Neill.
Yeah, as ever, Roy, I think that was all spot on, and it's a lot of really good questions from Abe there, so I'm not sure we can get through. I can easily get through all of them. If Boris does survive this, fights the next election, and wins big again, I think you'd have to say yes, you would conclude then that all this sort of seeming incompetence we might look at, all these kind of scandals and mess, haven't come to much, and ultimately people are voting for the Conservatives for different reasons, and maybe that's to do with our sort of cultural divides that are defining our politics. I think you might have to conclude that. I don't know if that will happen or not. On the other sort of part of the question, I think, was around the different kind of characters, and I think, Royford, you're right that there aren't. He's a bit unique, isn't he, Boris? And he's the only one that's sort of a character politician like that in the UK. You can talk about people like Liz Truss building a kind of sort of persona, and Richie Sunak having a sort of Instagram profile and things, and those things get attention here. But no one's a character like him, and I suspect he's a bit unique. And I also wonder whether the moment for someone like that was that moment in 2019, where we're in the middle of Brexit, and we were all kind of doom and gloom, and someone a bit positive who was going to get Brexit done and be sort of jolly, maybe that kind of worked for him in a way that it just might not have worked in any normal sort of more somber election. That's my guess, but it's hard to know.
Yeah, and I think maybe there's another reason why Boris Johnson is very much an outlier when it comes to British politicians, is because you can't end up getting into high office in the United Kingdom, let alone to become the Prime Minister, without going through the whole party machine. So that's going to basically, you know, round off some of your rough edges. Boris Johnson is completely atypical in that regard. But if we're looking at Rishi Sunak, here is somebody where, whether you like his politics or not, he appears to be competent. He's got a grasp of figures. He knows how to deliver core messages, etc. All these things are kind of things which Boris Johnson doesn't have. But Boris Johnson has been atypical in that he kind of, whilst he was an MP, he always had this media career. And no other British politician has kind of had a similar journey to Downing Street. So I there aren't any Boris Johnson light figures in British politics waiting to take control of the Conservative Party. Corey, you've been waiting for quite some time. Now is your time to unmute yourself and ask your question.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you sort of just said what I was going to say, really, regarding the competition or lack thereof. And I think that's one reason why I don't see him going anytime soon, because, yeah, I guess I won't repeat what you just said, but basically just dittos what you said regarding the competition. The other point I wanted to mention was somebody, I think it was Drew, was on stage before asking about the nature of removing prime ministers and whether it's a recent thing. And, speaking about history, and it really isn't, because even if you go back to the days before, days when there were Tories and Whigs, sort of early 1800s, I guess the process has always been, the fundamental question, hasn't it, has always been who can command the confidence of the House of Commons. So going back to then, I guess just, I don't know if Drew's still here, I think he's on, I don't know if he's in the audience still, but I guess just answering his question from before, yes, it is a historical thing, and it has happened, not that much in the last 50 years, but if you go back to the, especially early 1800s, that happened quite a lot. So yeah, those were my 2 points, really. But yes, regarding Johnson, in my opinion, nothing less than him downing 5 pints in the cabinet room on video would get rid of him, minimum, in my opinion, right now.
Cathy Edge, you've joined us, Cathy. There's an opinion poll which Sky News ran, which we ran a clip for earlier. I'm just going to run it again, Cathy. I want you to tell us about how Boris Johnson is viewed in Wales. Let's hear about Boris Johnson's poll ratings.
Let's bring you some breaking news now on the fallout from these latest claims of Downing Street parties. Let's bring in our deputy political editor, Sam Coates, who's in Westminster, and tell us more. Sam.
YouGov have surveyed over 5,000 people today about what they think about Boris Johnson's position. Let's bring you the results. 56% say that Boris Johnson should resign in a poll seen by Sky News today. 27% say he should remain in his role. So that's the no, Boris Johnson shouldn't resign on your screen now. And 17% think that they don't know at the moment.
Cathy, I must admit, considering that we have senior backbenchers saying the Prime Minister's position is untenable, the leader of the Tory party in Scotland says, don't even bother coming to Scotland, you've got to go. The leader of the Greater London Council has basically said, you've also got to go. I'm surprised that only 57% of us Brits think that the Prime Minister's got to go. Are you surprised by these figures? And how does Boris Johnson play out in Wales?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me in. I thought this was a work event, but he doesn't play well in Wales at all. But I think the unique thing about the Tory party is the selection, the actual selection of the Prime Minister is down to a very small bunch of people. And the 1922 committee are key in that. But it's those kind of like 800,000 vote members of the Tory party that decide the fate, essentially, of who runs. There are alternatives, I think. Rishi Sunak is reasonably tolerated across the floor. Truss, I don't think, is. But there are they do have alternatives at the moment, and I think he will go. But he will only. I'm surprised that poll is that high, actually, to be honest, because he there seems to be, as Steve was saying, he seems to be unique. There seems to be one rule for him, even within his own party. So it's difficult. I mean, I hope he go. The thought of Priti Patel or Lynn Truss taking over fills me with a dread that I haven't felt since, well, ever. But Sunak seems a palatable alternative in that, as you say, he's competent, and that is the low bar that we're looking at the moment. But it will be interesting. I thought he was going to go today, but there's a new story about two more parties that's just emerged tonight. And the interesting thing is who's reported them, and it's The Telegraph. And they were on the eve of the Queen burying her husband. And The Telegraph coming up with that is quite telling, because for Americans in Europe, it's a very right-wing, very Tory paper, in my humble opinion. And yeah, that's my two cents, Roy Field. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I did say this earlier, that for me, there are two papers which is going to be significant, that if he survives until Sunday, then it's going to be the damaging editorials in the Sunday Mail, or the Mail on Sunday, sorry, and the Telegraph. Because for Americans, the Telegraph, as Kathy says, isn't just the paper of the Conservative Party, it's of the Conservative establishment. You know, if you can look at your lineage of your family going back a few generations, and you are somebody of considerable wealth, you read The Telegraph. So this is fundamentally the establishment's newspaper. So them breaking that there were other parties in Downing Street is a real sign of which direction the wind is blowing. And I'm going to say thank you to Steve O'Neill, to AB, to Steve Crone, to Piotr, to Kathy, and to all the other people that we actually had on stage, and also to Drew, who removed himself to the audience. We are going to do another Mid-Atlantic show on Tuesday, and I can't tell you who the guest is going to be, because it hasn't been 100% confirmed, but if we pull this off, it's going to be our biggest guest that we've ever had on the show. So why don't you join the club, so as soon as that is confirmed, you will be alerted with what time that room's going to happen. But it's a sitting US congressman of some repute who's basically said he does want to come onto the show. So that's inducement for you to join the Mid-Atlantic Room Club. Sorry, we do have a whole load of podcasts. Listen to us on a podcatcher of your choice. Go download the shows. Fundamentally, what this room is about is to try and understand US and UK politics, but also to promote civil discourse. I think we can all see that at a time when many opinion writers are saying that America is going through a cold civil war, and we've had Brexit, which exposed so many fissures within UK society, the time for us, whether we are right or left, to still to be able to communicate and converse with each other is even more important. And that's what this room tries to promote. I've always been of the belief that the Commonwealth, the common ground, is absolutely vitally important. And it's for all of us, whether we're left or right, to inhabit that ground and to stake a claim to it, and to metaphorically be able to meet each other, whether we agree or disagree with their politics. So that's what Mid-Atlantic is all about. Great to see so many people in this room to talk about Boris Johnson and to determine whether and if his final days are just about ahead of us. There you go. That's been me, Royfield Brown. You can back channel me. You can send me an email at royfield@gmail.com if you'd like to discuss future shows. I'm going to try and do these once a week. Toodlepip, goodbye. Look after yourselves. Look after your loved ones, and make sure that you look after yourself also. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree.
That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.